Hey everybody, and welcome back to another episode here of The Daily Grind. On today's episode is the man who can truly make anything happen, Mr. Steve Sims. Enjoy today's episode. Today's episode is brought to you by eBay Canada. eBay Canada continues to help retailers bring their businesses online quickly through the Up and Running program. When you sell on eBay as a retailer, you can continue to serve your existing customers while gaining access to more than 180 million buyers in 190 countries, allowing you to stay local yet sell global. This Up and Running program is incredible, and as a Canadian business seller, you gain access to no listing fees on up to 200 listings per month, where you only pay fees when you sell, access to the eBay community group, where you can get real-time advice and inspiration from experienced sellers and eBay team members, powerful selling tools and insights, and access to eBay's 180 million plus buyers around the world. eBay Canada is here to help you. They've been supporting Canadian small business retailers for 25 years and launched this Up and Running program to meet an urgent need today. So if you're a Canadian small business retailer, or you know someone who is, visit ebay.ca/up and running and get started with this today. Again, that is ebay.ca/up and running. Hi everyone. Now today on The Daily Grind, we have with us the author of the new book, Blue Fishing, The Art of Making Things Happen. And this man really does make things happen. I can honestly say he probably has the coolest job I've ever heard of in the entire world. And what I want you to do all listening today is kind of think of like the two most, like the two biggest things you want to do or you've ever wanted to do. I guarantee you that this man can make it happen. He's helped people visit the International Space Station, take a submarine trip to the Titanic, become James Bond for a weekend in Monte Carlo. I don't know how you did that. Sing on stage with the legendary rock band Journey, do meet and greets with renowned recording artists and celebrities, and even help people get a walk-on role on a hit TV show. I want to introduce you all to the man that makes all that happen, Mr. Steve Sims. Steve, what's happening? How are you today?
Well, what an intro. I'll try and live up to that.
Steve, say for those people who maybe are just being first introduced to you or who are a little unfamiliar with you, if you don't mind just kind of breaking down a little bit more about who you are and what you do.
I suppose the easiest way to put it is Forbes called me the real life Wizard of Oz. We are a high-end concierge firm, invitation only, and clients come from all over the planet, royalty, famous, the richer and unfamous, and they come to us for their travel, their access, and also to make amazing birthday parties, including elephants and rock stars, or you know, piano lessons or drum lessons with Guns N' Roses. Anything that the client can dream of and afford, we're the people to make it happen.
Amazing. So I got to ask you, like, before we dive into this a little bit, I mean, you've worked with a ton of these people, wealthy, well-known people for sure. Like, what's been the craziest request that you've gotten and say, like, actually executed it for them?
Well, I'm glad you asked that because there's actually two parts to that question. The craziest request that we did not do was because this guy contacted me and wanted to detonate a nuclear warhead.
Yeah,
that one we refused.
Okay, I'm glad you did that.
I will say straight off the bat, we've never done anything crazy.
Okay.
And the reason I say crazy is because what may be crazy to you may be passionate to somebody else.
Absolutely.
So nothing that we do is crazy, but I would say probably one of our most interesting fun events. You know, we had a client that wanted to meet the rock band Journey. We didn't feel that was good enough, so we actually managed to negotiate that he got on stage with them live in San Diego and sang Fortunes with his favorite rock band.
Wow.
with the entire band, the entire concert. That's taken a rock band experience as far as you can. But I would say probably one of the coolest ones for me, being a European guy, was when we were challenged to come up with the ultimate exclusive restaurant in Florence. And we actually took over a museum that houses Michelangelo's David, set up a table of six at the feet of the iconic statue at like 9 o'clock at night with a completely empty museum, and then had the maestro Andrea Bocelli come in and serenade them during dinner. That was quite cool.
Those are all cool. I mean, anyone listening today, I think everyone listening has like the same thought in their head, like, how do you do it?
Well, for a start, you don't recognize it as crazy, but more important than that, you don't recognize it as impossible.
Yeah.
I love it when people come to me and they go, oh, I want to do this, but it's impossible. Just makes me look more spectacular when we've done it. It's never impossible, or as the old saying goes, it's only impossible until someone does it. So
absolutely.
With us, we just break it down. You want to close down a museum? Okay, it's a venue. It's a location. You know, don't glorify things. Don't put them on pedestals. The second you start looking at something and going, oh, I'm not going to be able to do that, guess what? You're absolutely right. So it's all mindset.
I love it. And what I kind of want to do with you, Steve, is like, how did you get started in this? Like, if you don't mind kind of sharing your story a little bit, your journey, like, how did you get involved in this? How did you start Bluefish?
So, all right, this is where credibility goes, if I had any. I was a East London bricklayer. Okay. I managed to talk my way into getting a stockbroking job in Hong Kong. I landed on the Saturday from London into Hong Kong. I got drunk with him on the Saturday, drunk with him on the Sunday, did orientation on the Monday and was fired on the Tuesday. Then I started working on the door of some very dubious nightclubs in Wan Chai. And that's how it started. I never knew what I wanted to do, but I knew most passionately what I didn't want to do. So I kept on moving away from stuff that I just did not like, hoping that I would bumble into something I do like. So I wasn't the guy that sat down with a plan.
Yeah.
I just knew I didn't like bricklaying, so I went to be a stockbroker. And that failed, and I ended up on the door. And I knew I didn't want to be a doorman. So I started basically befriending the rich people that were coming into the clubs and even turning them away. One of my highlights was I started turning rich folks away if the club wasn't kicking. You know, I would say, look, guys, not tonight. And they would look at me thinking I wanted to punch them in. And I would say, no, no, no. I'm just telling you that tonight's not good for you. You know, you won't go in. And you're going to have only 10 people in there. All regulars. So go down the road, take a Jimmy, turn down. That's where it's happening tonight. So I started befriending them. And my idea was, if you want a rich job with rich people, go where rich people are. And it wasn't good for me to form relationships with poor people because poor people couldn't afford me or hire me. So I started just building up a network of very affluent, powerful people with the idea that eventually I could turn around and them and go, hey, Bobby, we've known each other for 5 years. Have you got any occupations around that would, you know, suit my traits, my skill sets, of which I didn't know what I had.
Yeah.
But before I ever got to that, I was actually building up a position as a man who can. So without realizing it, I was trying to do this just to befriend them and have them rely on me and have them into my circle and have them trust me. Before I knew it, I was actually becoming a source that a lot more affluent people wanted. And I was getting all my business was referral. And before you knew it, I was the man that can. And that's when someone said to me before, oh, you're like an elite concierge. And you know, no one knew what a concierge was back in the 90s, but that's where it started.
You know, it's a really interesting story. And one thing I really take from that is, like, obviously, from a young age, even you at the door, relationship building has been sort of your number one focus. Even with these celebrities, when they were coming into the club, like, a lot of people wouldn't have the nuts, so to speak, to be able to turn these people down. But you weren't doing it to seem impressive. You were just trying to do it in order to help them. Like, listen, this isn't rocking tonight. Find somewhere else. Here's a spot to go. And then you started to build their trust a little bit. You didn't, like you had said earlier, you're not putting people on pedestals. You were building that relationship. And then from that, that formulated something for you.
Yeah, 100%. I wasn't trying to be a dick.
Yeah.
I was just trying to help people. And quite simply, from an early stage without realizing it, I was building a relationship, and that's where it's worked.
That's fantastic. And I love what you're doing right now because obviously you have now written this book, and now this is your second book, I believe. Second book?
No, it is my second one, but the first one was a translation of an interview, so it wasn't exactly a real book.
Okay. I knew that you always say that when I heard you on other interviews, so I wanted to be maybe the first one to say that I've read the other one, but I haven't. I'm sorry.
That's fine. You're safe there. Don't worry about it.
But what I really love is you kind of telling your story. And what you're doing really translate over into to everything, whether you're an entrepreneur and you want to get in front of like-minded people or people you view as mentors. Like, it's kind of the same process that you go through when doing these excursions and not crazy things, but really passionate things for people.
Yeah, I don't overcomplicate things. And if anyone following this actually looks up what I look like, I am definitely the guy you don't want to see coming out of a dark alley at night or asking you for your credit card. I don't have the look of a high-end concierge. So what I had going for me was transparency. And the word of last year, and it's now creeping into this year, and I hate it, is authenticity. Mm. Now, I am not authentic. I will fight that down to the death. I'm transparent. Yeah. I'm impossible to misunderstand what I want from this relationship and what I give to this relationship. So when people are dealing with me, they know what they're going to get. They know what I'm asking. Hey, you want to go there? I can get you that. It's going to cost you $5,000. Do you want to proceed?
Yeah.
Bang. That was as simple as that. So when I had the chance to write this book, and it was phenomenal, and I'm talking to anyone now thinking of doing a book, I got the chance of writing a book purely and simply because of my network, my circle. I was in the right place at the right time, and I got asked to do a book, not on the world of luxury stuff, but on how a bricklayer from London does this with the Pope and Elon Musk.
Yeah.
And so for the first time, I was able to go, yeah, maybe I could impart some of my wisdoms. And I openly tell everyone, I'm a failure. I failed a lot more times than most people. And what is the best education in the world? To learn how not to do things. So I've learned, and I've paid. My college was on the street, falling over, getting ripped off, getting screwed over, having staff leave with your best clients, CRMs breaking down, not needing. That's where all of my education's come from. And I was now able to put it into a book in a very primitive, raw fashion that can affect everyone from just a mom and pop business to a Fortune 500 to a guy and a girl just learning the art of the most critical thing in the world now, communication. And it's a dying art form.
It absolutely is, especially now we're 2018, where it's so easy to just communicate in different forms other than simply, you know, picking up the phone. I've had a lot of success in getting guests on simply by picking up the phone, which I think people are absolutely terrified doing.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And it's also, I was with someone a while ago, and the phone rings, and they were like, oh, sorry about that. And it's an alarm that's now going off that, quite honestly, you're not prepared for.
Yeah.
And because it's so rare now, you're talking to someone in the office, and it goes, ring, 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 ring. And they look at it, and they go, oh, God, what's that? It's a phone. It's been around a while, but it is now becoming, sadly, an intrusive thing. I have to admit, I have my phone on vibrate because yeah. I don't like the noise. I like the jiggle in the pocket as well, but I don't like the noise it gives out. And so in which case, I do urge people to select a tone that's not too intrusive, but it is still the best form of communication, physically speaking, one-on-one.
Absolutely, 100%. And one thing I want to kind of touch on is you had mentioned failures and how you learn from those failures. And I was wondering if you could kind of share like your biggest failure or the biggest obstacle that you've had to overcome, because you've been doing this for years now. I'm sure that you've run into a ton of roadblocks. You've gotten through some of them. Some of them you probably sometimes don't. But just kind of share with us like the biggest obstacle that you've had to overcome to kind of get where you are right now.
Probably, and I've had loads.
Yeah.
I've been sued more times than I want to. I've had contracts go wrong. I've had staff rip me off. I've had clients rip me off. I've had all of those things. That's what allows us to call ourselves entrepreneurs. Probably the biggest obstacle I ever had was this guy called Steve Sims. And he got in the – I'm being deadly yeah. serious here. We are 9 times out of 10 our biggest obstacle. Now, when my business, and I've been doing it 23 years now, ranging from Hong Kong, Monaco, Stade, Geneva, Palm Beach, and I'm now here in Los Angeles. We're damn good at what we're doing. We're rated as one of the best in the planet. And you can't even contact us if you don't pay $5,000. So we're up there.
Yeah.
Okay. Now that's arrogant, but I'm trying to preempt it with it. Halfway through my life, and again, if anyone looks me up, I'm a guy in a black t-shirt and jeans, and I don't even have a car. I ride motorcycles everywhere. Live in California, perfect weather, but I'm on two wheels, hopefully until sadly the day comes along when I'm no longer. There was a point in my life where I wanted the company to be bigger and better, i.e. more profitable. And what do all entrepreneurs do the second that they come up with that mindset? The second they go, oh, I need to scale this. I need to make it larger. I need to get more profit margins. I need to get more revenues. What do? We fuck it up.
Yeah.
Every entrepreneur screws up their own magic. They do. And I did. And the first thing I did was I looked at myself in the mirror and I went, hang on a minute. I pull up to some of the richest people in Europe and Asia on a motorcycle, black t-shirt and jeans, earrings. You know, no, that's not cool. And so I literally took out all of my earrings and I started, and I've got eye piercings and all that stupid stuff. And I bought a car and I bought a Ferrari. And I actually turned up at these clients in a Ferrari, in a suit. And I would go up there. I had so many layers of show on me.
Yeah.
I'm surprised I could walk up the bloody stairs. You know, and the trouble is there's so much front that's now on you, so many layers of costume of what you want the other person to acknowledge and be impressed with, that you're spending so much energy walking away from that Ferrari as though you don't care too much and that you're cool with it, you know, strolling up, you know. You're so concerned with how you look, you act, you appear, you have no energy left to actually do what you're supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
Now, I actually found that two things happened. One, I got richer, not wealthier, okay? And I have a big divide between rich and wealth that we'll come back to if you wish. But I became richer. And I know you're thinking, well, that's not really a failure. But here was the downside. I got more clients that I knew no longer were connecting with because they didn't know who Steve Sims was. They saw this guy turning up in a fancy Ferrari, expensive watch, and a sharp suit. They didn't know who I was.
Yeah.
And I was putting on such an act that how could these people possibly resonate with me? So I had no connection with my clients. The clients I did have, they stopped calling me. They stopped communicating with me because I was lost. And I remember throwing a party in Monaco and we had photographs taken of it. And this was back in 97, the days where you used to get a film out the back of the camera, shove it in an envelope, and somewhere within the next decade, you get those photos back. I was flicking through these photographs and there was a picture of me leant up against my Ferrari outside this yacht in Monte Carlo. And the startling, scary thing was there's this picture, but I wasn't in it. This avatar, this perception was, but it wasn't me. And you know, honestly, still today, I can't remember much about that party because I was putting so much effort into not grabbing a fine whiskey and telling dirty jokes and just having a laugh with people that I didn't enjoy it. I was physically not there. So that actually sent me in a spiral. I actually went head down into depression for about 3 or 4 days. And I came out, the suits were good, but I decided I'm going to wear them. They're not going to wear me. I put the car up for sale. I put the suits in the back of the wardrobe, started turning up everywhere on the motorbike, which I still thankfully had. And two things happened. The old clients came back, the new clients went away. But because now I can say, hang on, this is me, this is who I am, I actually came back stronger. And I was able to turn around to my clients and go, what do I do wrong for you? And they would go, oh, you do nothing wrong. Good. Tell me 5 friends that should have me on speed dial. And all of a sudden, I was getting more business. And I was more me. So there was a little bit of fluctuation, like everyone's revenues. But the biggest problem I ever had was me trying to second guess who I was.
You know what? I really love that because I think it's a big problem in our society today. I mean, you look around in the internet, you can go on your phone and people idolize people with Ferraris and nice suits and beautiful watches and they're on yachts. And, even though, yeah, some of those things are really nice, it can be, like Steve said, it can be tiresome if that's not you. And I think that's what I really appreciate about you and sharing that is when you had mentioned transparency, I think that that's a huge key, because transparency for all the other haters out there too, it really gives them nothing to hate on. Like, you are who you are. Everything's out there for the open to see, right? And I think that that's truly important, especially if you're getting into business. And I think that's the value of, like you had said, so if you don't mind building on what you had mentioned about the difference between what you value as being rich and wealthy.
So that was in my time where I was flying around the planet. I was seeing all of these icons and trinkets of show off. And I noticed that I had clients that were incredibly rich, i.e. had a lot of digits in their bank account, could afford small countries like England. And then I had other clients that maybe weren't as rich as that, but were incredibly wealthy. Mm. And I noticed that wealth was basically how well you loved, lived, and laughed. And wealth is knowing that when you fall down, someone's not going to judge you. Someone's not going to get that camera out and take a picture of you. Someone's actually going to put their hand down and pick you up. Something's going to go wrong, and someone's going to go, right, let's sit down. Let's make sure this works. Someone's going to say, hey, let's go and have a party. And you can rely on everyone in that party to be good, genuine people. Wealth is about your circle of life. I have whiskey inside the house. I have gas in my motorcycle tanks. My family's fed. My family's safe. My family's warm. I therefore am the wealthiest man in the world.
Yeah.
And as soon as you can actually get a benchmark, and okay, what's wealth for you? It's being able to know that your kids haven't got to worry about school fees. It's knowing that if something happens to any one of your family, you can sort it out, whether it be flying them somewhere, getting them the medical aid they need, the support systems in place. That's wealth. Not having a bunch of digits in the bank account. Now, yeah, you're going to go, oh, yeah, it's easy to say that without money. Money's not the problem. Your attitude's the problem. If you've got a problem that can go away by you signing a check, you don't have a problem. You have a cash flow issue. Mm. And so you've really got to be able to dissect the difference between rich and wealth. And I know a lot of financially poor people that are far wealthier than some of the richest clients I got.
Yeah, I can totally attest to that too. And I'm sure you being hanging around with all these people who are wealthy and who are rich, like what I've found in my short time here is that when I speak to people who are rich, they're focused on things, right? And the problem with that is there's always nicer things. So it's like they're just looking for instant gratification, whereas people who are more wealthy have more of a vision, like you had said, where they're focused on creating a healthy environment for their family and making sure that they have the best options for themselves, or making sure that the world's a better place. Their vision, money just comes to them based on their vision. They're not focused on money. That's not their number one thing.
Yeah, exactly. You know, the money is nothing more than the paper that gives you experiences, gives you reassurance, gives you comfort, but the paper's not important.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's obviously you had mentioned before this podcast how you're part of masterminds, and learning from your failures has been a huge part of your life to get you where you are. I'm wondering, say, if there's been a mentor or someone involved in your life that's had a real impact on where you are.
Oh yeah. Tons.
Yeah.
We don't have enough minutes in this day, and I ain't got enough breath in me to name them. But, I'm a great believer in, I love being third, second, fifth best, 10th best in the room. Okay. I don't ever want to be number one. I never want to be the smartest person in the room, as they say, otherwise you're in the wrong room. So I have people in my circle that I can go out to and that have come to me that are there to support. And that's part of the wealth, knowing that you have a Rolodex of people that you can rely on to go, I got this problem. How did you manage to do this? Oh, and someone's slandering me here. How do I handle that PR? And oh, my website's gone down. How do I get a good website, you know, designer? It's not going to charge me $100,000. Having those people in my circle, I've had so many of them. And why do I have them? Because I look for them. A lot of people sit there going, well, I don't have any people in my life. When was the last time you went to a mastermind? When was the last time you went to an educational event? Now, we're growing. I think everyone out there needs to screw Bitcoin, invest in themselves. And they should look around and they should go, okay, I'm an entrepreneur that specializes in a plumbing company. I'm going to see if there's any entrepreneurial groups in my area that I can go to and talk about marketing. You'll be surprised when you're in a room of like-minded individuals, what happens? Resonance happens. And you end up connecting with people because you're both there for the same reason. There's nothing better going up a mountain with 10 people than to realize you've just met 9 other people that like climbing up a mountain. So you've got to get out and educate yourself, get that reassurance, get that circle, and get those people ready to support you.
I love it. I love all of this. Now, one of the final questions I'd like to ask Steve is, you know, how old are you, Steve, if you don't mind me asking?
I often say I'm a 51-year-old, 4-year-old. I'm constantly questioning why, but my birth certificate says 51.
So let's go back in time, okay? Let's go back, say, 40, 30 years. You can choose the age. I'm interested to know if you go back in time and offer yourself one piece of advice. What would that one piece of advice be?
It was about a week ago that I started getting that question, and I've actually ended up getting it about 5 times. And like most podcasts, you answer a question, and then the next time it comes up, you answer it slightly different because you've had a chance to think of it.
Yeah.
Okay. This is one of those questions which I can answer categorically, quick as a flash, although I'm not, but will never change. If you fail and learn from it, why would you be such a twat to miss out on the failure? It's that failure that made you the person you are. So when I look back at my life and I think of all the people that I've had issues with, all the companies I've had issues with, all the problems I've encountered that have made me a better person, and there's nothing better than falling down and knowing that through your effort and your power, you can get back up. It makes you slightly invincible to the next time it crops up. So someone asked me that question. I thought to myself, there are no scars that I would get rid of because they made me who I am. Therefore, if I visited my younger self at a bar, the only thing I would do was tell him to stop drinking shit whiskey. I'd buy him a decent whiskey and then just bid him farewell and say, you're going to have some fun. I wouldn't do anything other than get that cheap whiskey out of his hand.
Now, what whiskey are you drinking these days?
Oh, I'm a mad fan of the Japanese stuff. The Japanese stuff is just Yamazaki. My favorite at the moment is Hibiki Harmony, but I've really fallen in love with the Japanese whiskeys.
How do you drink it? Drink it straight on the rocks?
Do you know, there's a various few cocktails. I like Yamazaki in a drink called Samurai Sword, and if anyone wants the recipe for that, I will be glad to share it. But Hibiki Harmony is the only Japanese whiskey that I actually drink on the rocks.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah, it's weird, but it's nice. Such a good whiskey.
I know you probably answered this, but like, what motivates you to keep grinding? What gets you out of bed every day and just fires you up to do what you do?
The fact that it's a new day. I'm always fighting that in 6 months' time, I'm going to be in exactly the same position as I am, you know, 6 months ago. So I like every day. I love pouring my coffee, putting the dogs out, turning the emails on, and go, right, what challenge do I have today? And if I don't have a challenge, then I create one. So I have to be challenged every single day of my life.
I love it. Now, I'm interested to know, what's your favorite podcast to listen to, or what's your favorite book that you're reading right now?
Oh, there's so many different good podcasts, and I'm going to align that with music. I absolutely love a ton of music, from classical to heavy metal, but I very rarely ever listen to an entire album all the way through. I will quite openly shuffle between, like, you know, 10 or 15 different albums.
Yeah.
That's the same with podcasts. Gotcha. I think Joe Polish is brilliant. I think Dean Jackson is brilliant. I think Jason Gaynard's brilliant. Tim Ferriss is brilliant. Tucker Max is brilliant. But none of them are more brilliant than each other. And every single one of them's got a different perspective. And I think it's the perspective that is what's powerful, because under a different situation, you may need to tweak that brilliance, and that's where the perspectives comes in.
Love it. Now, what's been your most successful form of marketing?
Being me.
Yeah.
Take zero effort.
Authenticity or not authenticity.
Transparency.
Transparency. That's it. Now, Steve, we've heard a lot from you today. You've shared a ton of great content. We covered a lot of topics. Say my audience remembers nothing from today's podcast, but they can go home with one thought. What do you want that one thought to be?
You ready?
We're
No one
ready.
ever dr no one ever drowned by falling in the water. They drowned by staying there.
I
Mic
like
drop.
that. I like that. Now, everyone, as you can see from this podcast today, success is driven by passion, hunger, and today, transparency. Everyone has to overcome obstacles. Everyone has a story. Start building yours today. We had the chance to speak with Steve Sims today. Steve, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
And Steve, just quick, what's the best way for our audience to connect with you and learn more about what you got going on?
Get over to SteveDSims, SIMS.com. So that's Steve D for dynamite or Diablo or dog, Sims, SIMS, SteveDSims.com.
That's SteveDSims.com. I will share that link and best way to connect with Steve. And until next time, everyone, Colin Morgan signing off. And always remember to keep on grinding.